Welcome to the Tim Music Podcast on Talk North. I'm Lavelle E. Neal III, columnist, Minneapolis Star Tribune. I'm here with Twins legend Roy Smalley. Jim Swinham's usually here, but he's not. He's not even in the state. He's not even in the region. He's not even in the country. He's in Japan at the Olympics. For how long, we don't know.
He's over there at a giant super spreader event.
Yes, the super spreader event of all time. We our fingers are crossed for Jim. That means we won't hear about what he's grilling on his gas grill this week. We'll be reading about him from Tokyo and parts around Tokyo as the Olympics are going to be trying to get through the next couple weeks safely. But we'll see. But we're here to talk baseball. And I got Roy here, and we're going to chop up some things about the Twins. The breaking news is the injury to Alex Kirilloff has led to which will likely be, I was told, a season-ending injury. He's going to have surgery on his left wrist that has been bugging him. He injured it earlier in the season. There was concerns that his season was going to be over then. He avoided surgery. He's been able to play with it. But now, Roy, as we've found out here, the Twins expected that he was going to have surgery eventually. That I don't want to say it irks me, but it makes me a little bit concerned about the best interest of the player. He was playing on the wrist that he needed surgery on. He probably willingly did it because he's a rookie and he wants to hit, and he was hitting. He's actually hitting home runs with this thing. So how do you balance this? The needs of the team, the shape of the roster at the time, the desire to win versus making sure you're not jeopardizing the player getting injuring himself even more.
Yeah, I think all really great questions and topics within this topic. But let's go back to where the Twins were when he was put into the lineup. Immediately started hitting pretty impressively, and then all of a sudden, I mean, the reason he was put in the lineup, and then after he was put in the lineup, Twins are out of outfielders. I mean, they were so they've got a first baseman in Miguel Sano that was struggling mightily. Mm-hmm. And not that he's not still, but I mean, he was in the throes of, oh my gosh, what's going on here? And Kirilloff can play some first base, but they had him in the outfield, and then outfielders started going down, and they didn't have anybody else. So immediately then he hurts his wrist. Now there's a question, I think a good one that you have, which is, okay, the season's not over at that point. You still think, I mean, there's a lot of talent on the team that they're kind of scratching their heads. I've actually talked with Thad Levine at one point in time around that time. And the head scratching was, you know, I don't know if I've seen a team with this much talent play this badly, you know, not perform the way they have not performed, right? And so I think what that said, besides the honesty, was, but that talent should out at some point in time, right?
Yes.
I mean, and so let's not throw in the towel, and you know, we have no outfielders. We got a first baseman struggling. Here's a young kid that, you know, came out of Double-A, has had very limited, you know, didn't play in 2020, limited AAA time here, and he's hitting in the big leagues. Let's see what we got here, and maybe he can help us, you know, get back into some semblance of shape until outfielders start getting healthy again, right? So you finesse that with, yeah, but what's the best interest of the kid? Mm-hmm. And I think you raise a good point. You also raise a good point and said, I guarantee you, Kirilloff said, hey, I'm fine.
Yes.
I you know, and other guys have gone through the season knowing that they were going to get surgery at the end of the year, and they want to play through it, do the best they can. And I'm sure that that was Kirilloff's mindset, and the Twins are probably thinking he's hitting well. I'm sure they talked with the doctors and said, can he mess himself up permanently here, you know, by playing? If they didn't, it would be one of the greatest travesties of all time, right?
Oh, yeah, do
so I'm sure they talked to with the doctors in Kirilloff and said, look, you can do what you want. The doctors don't think you're going to make it any worse. And I'm sure Alex said, you know, I want to play. But at some point in time, even for a young player, when the pain gets to be a lot and it's really affecting your productivity, you know, I mean, you don't want to keep going up there and saying, I don't have much of a chance here, and the best thing can happen to this at-bat is I hurt. I feel all this pain. It's time to get it cut.
Yeah, but I'm sure they learned a lot about the kid's willingness to deal with something like this during the season. So that's a credit to him. the big picture thing is that, you know, this kid looks like he's a keeper. Keep forgetting that he made his major league debut in the playoffs in that second game against Houston.
Right.
And the swing was evident. He looks calm at the plate. Really hasn't looked overwhelmed. I think there's been times when he's gotten aggressive and maybe he's gotten a little bit of trouble because of that.
Yep.
But for the most part, he's pulled himself in and has had professional at-bats. The arrow is pointing up on this kid. And him and Trevor Larnach came in, and they're both hitting like 260, and they're holding their own. Larnach was pushing like a 380 on-base percentage. And on a team in which you had guys like Kepler, Polanco for a while, not now, and Snow hitting around 200. Okay, the two kids were like carrying this lineup, anchoring
absolutely
this lineup for
yep.
a while. So I'm excited about what definitely Kirilov and also a little bit of Larnach are going to do in the future. Based on what you have seen, what do you think the future holds for these guys?
Big time for both of them, I think. I've really been impressed with the way they comport themselves in the batter's box. You know, the way they go up there, they don't seem overwhelmed. Kirilov is a little bit further along from a polish standpoint than Larnach is, I think. I mean, Larnach is getting schooled just a little bit by guys with good stuff. And hey, by the way, we all get schooled by guys with good mm-hmm. stuff. But you see him, you know, missing changeups and breaking ball. I mean, looking like it's coming out of Double A. You know, is a man. Nobody had this stuff down there, right? And it's going to be an adjustment for him, right? But from a talent, skill, mechanics standpoint, I think Larnach's going to be a run producer and a on-base plus slugging guy. And I think Kirilov the same way, and Kirilov's a little further along. I love Kirilov's whole approach because, you know, we talk as hitters, we talk about staying inside the ball and staying in the middle of the diamond and, you know, all those kinds of things. And he does it. You can see that's his plan. He is his whole approach is staying from inside to back through the middle. And mm-hmm. and generally speaking, guys don't want to do that because then they can't hit the ball out of the ballpark because they hit a lot of balls in the gaps, left center, as a left-hand hitter, left center, center field, and right center where the parks are deepest. But he's got the power to hit it out of there, you know, in those areas. And that's just as he continues to learn about big league pitching, then that approach is just – that's why I think he's going to be so good. He already kind of reminds me of Don Mattingly a little bit in this way. Mattingly came up as a line the ball to left center type of hitter. That's – I mean, he hit 300 to minor leagues. They thought he was going to be a terrific hitter. But they had no idea about that power was going to come. And when you are a 300 hitter because you can hit the ball the opposite field, you use the whole field, you can learn how to pull the ball. Mm-hmm. But when you're always pulling the ball, and that's what you know how to do, it's really hard to go the other way and say, okay, I got to use the whole field. Miguel Sano is a great example of that. You know, I mean, it's just hard right. for him, as much as I've always said, look at Miguel Cabrera. Go just do what he did. Look at Kirby Puckett. Go do what he did. Hit fastballs to right center, and then the breaking ball is going to go 600 feet to left field if it's a strike. Right? I mean, you're just going to hit that naturally. It's hard for for guys that want to pull the ball to learn that, whereas guys that come up and they are middle of the diamond kind of guys with power, man, there's no ceiling on that. And I think that's the way Kirilov's going to be. And it's just going to take at-bats for both of those guys. Yeah. It's just going to take reps. 1,000 at-bats, and all of a sudden they're going to be something, in my opinion.
Yeah, it would have been nice to see these guys in a lineup that was performing a little bit better than the Twins lineup to see just what they would have been able to do. Larnach, since I mentioned him, I had an opportunity to interview him the year after he was drafted. I talked to him down in Fort Myers. And, you know, looks aren't deceiving with him. He looks like an analytical guy. He's a very analytical guy. That's how he processes things. You can just see the wheels turning with him. And coming out of Oregon, he told me that he knew that at the time he was left center intensive. He was the opposite field guy. And he knew that once he got in professional baseball, that the teams are going to start testing him inside. So his immediate goal during his early minor league career was to prove that he could pull the ball with authority to right field, which I think he's done at times.
For sure.
But I wanted to get your thoughts on that aspect because I think sometimes he gets caught looking for the wrong half of the plate sometimes and how he's being approached. I don't know if you've seen the same thing or not.
Yeah, there are two things that I've seen with Larnach. First of all, just to go back to what I'm saying, he hasn't seen the kind of breaking balls and changeups, you know, anywhere in his life that he's seeing now. So that's a new thing for him. And the second new thing is seeing pitchers that have that kind of non-fastball stuff with guys that have good fastballs, right? I mean, there's guys throwing 95, you know, and also have this other stuff. So what he's used to is, okay, this guy throws hard, I'm going to gear it up for that, right? And then if guys show him that 95, 96, 97 for a ball in under his hands or some up high or somewhere, and then go to the other stuff, he's dialed up to 95, 96, 97, and he wants to pull the ball, and then he has trouble with the other stuff. Then all of a sudden, you can just see it. He starts to get a little anxiety about the fact he's not getting any hits. Now his swing gets a little longer. His swing's long right now. And his swing is going to tend to be a little bit longer anyway. That's just obviously the way he is. And a guy that hits the ball with power to left center and center field, like he can and like he said he used to be, their swing is just a little bit longer generally anyway. Mm-hmm. I saw him turn around, and I know you did too. They were down in Chicago earlier in the season, and when he first came up, and Liam Hendricks came in throwing 98, and he got a high inside fastball at 98 and just rocketed it off the right center, the right field, you know, fence. No problem hammering that. And it was almost to the pitch when after that, everybody in the league started changing up and, you know, throwing him every other kind of thing. Said, holy cow, this kid can hit a fastball.
I'm glad you brought that up, Roy, because there's stats out there, too. Larnach and Kirilloff were among the league leaders in getting the fewest fastballs. Yeah. They started pitching those kids backwards. That tells you what type of impact they had when they first came up here.
That's absolutely right. And this is not something, in my view, certainly not Kirilloff, because that center of the diamond approach is gonna allow him to learn pitcher to be able to hit breaking balls and changeups more about learning the pitchers than it is whether or not he can hit the pitch. That approach is gonna allow him to hit breaking balls and changeups. I'd have no concern. Larnach is a little bit different, but I think that's something he'll learn too. I really believe that he has the talent and, to your point, the mental makeup to figure out, you know, how to combat the guys, the pitchers. Here's the issue with young hitters, with all hitters, but particularly with young hitters. It takes a while for them to really trust that fastball that a guy threw inside off the plate was just a show-me pitch, or the fastball that was up high. That means to young hitters, I'm going to get that. I'm going to get that fastball, and I want to hit it. And for Larnach right now, they've got no intention of throwing him a fastball, you know, thigh high down the middle. They have no intention of doing that. If they do, it's a total mistake. And they pick spots to throw a fastball where they think they have to get back in the count, or they think they're going to fool him because they've thrown him so many other things. That's something that a young hitter with talent can learn to combat, and I think he will.
Right. One more Kirilloff related question. I don't know your injury career, but did you ever play with injury that you knew you would need off-season surgery on?
No. I played through some injuries that I wished I weren't. but no, there was I did have early in my career. I had some surgeries. But they were off season stuff, and the result was being a, you know, starting a little slowly during the season, just as I was playing through some of the after effects of the surgeries, and I got hurt during the year, and like, as I say, I never went on the disabled list. I'll never forget Mock's managing. I got traded to the Twins. One of the first trips we made was to Baltimore. I'm on second base, and they tried to pick me off second, and I went diving head first. It was a bunt play, you know, fake bunt play. Second baseman sneaks in behind, And I went diving back into second base. Bobby Gritch was playing second. He put his whole knee down in front of the base.
The block.
And I hit him full force of the dive with my little finger into his thigh. And it just accordioned my little finger. I looked down. It looked like a lightning bolt. And I went, oh, my God. I mean, it just freaked me out. And I just grabbed it. And just instinctively. I wasn't trying to pop it back in. But I just grabbed it and squeezed it. And it popped back in. And I was starting to get over the pain. And I thought, okay, well, good. That's everything's okay. I popped it back in. And then I felt something warm on my other hand. And I turned my hand over. And I could see where the bone had come all the way through the skin.
Oh, boy.
You know, and so I was looking at the top of my finger. And I popped it back in. I didn't realize that I was actually moving bone back into the underneath the skin. And so I called timeout. They take me out of the game. And they sent me immediately to a hand surgeon in Baltimore. And the team had to wait for me. We were going to Cleveland after that. They had to wait for me to get done with this guy because he took a look at it, the surgeon, and he said, oh, you, and I told him what happened. He looked at it, he goes, yeah. He said, you popped that back in, didn't you? And I said, well, yeah, I mean, just kind of self-defense.
Instinctively.
And he said, I wish you hadn't done that. I'm going to have to dislocate it again to clean it all out because you got dirt and stuff in there.
Oh, debridement.
So so he shot me up full of stuff. And fortunately, I didn't feel the second dislocation, but I heard it, and it's just not a great sound. But anyway, we got back from we go to Cleveland, and I'm in a cast and the whole deal, or the bandage, you know, big brace around my hand, and we got back to Minnesota 4 days later, and I come to the ballpark and that day, I know, you know, not playing, you know, for a while, and Mock comes up to me and says, looks at me and points his finger at me. He says, I don't want to put you on the DL. Now, the disabled list back then was 15 days.
Right.
And he said, I can't be without you for 15 days. I'm not putting you on the DL, which means you got to play as soon as you can. So I think it was 7 or 8 days after the actual injury, I taped my little finger to my ring finger and put a bubble wrap around the handle of my bat and go get him.
Wow.
So, and I'll never forget that I was in the first or second inning, and a ball was kind of a chopping, bouncing ball in the hole, and I had to gun it to first. Mm-hmm. And when I threw, just the snap of my hand, I thought my whole hand was going to come off.
Oh, no.
So anyway, when I say there were times that I was injured, I wish I hadn't played. That was kind of example number one.
We should do a whole show on Roy's injury history. If all the stories are like that one, we'd like to hear more of it. So, but before we jump on to our next subject here, let's take a break to talk about Minnesota Propane as well as Better Edge.
Hi, I'm Laura Shera, and do you really know what it costs to heat water at your home, cabin, or business? No? Well, we do. Based on data from the U.S. Department of Energy, the average annual savings for homes that heat their water with propane rather than electricity is $175. You can save energy and get 2.5 times as much hot water compared to the average electric water heater. Let's save energy and money with a cleaner, greener fuel. Propane, the right energy right now.
Combine your love for competition, social, and sports with Better Edge, the sports betting exchange that actually gives back to its bettors. Better Edge is a brand new locally based betting platform meant to connect users and attempt to add some coin to the bank. Completely legal and 100% fun. Compete against friends, sports insiders, and yourself with Better Edge and a number of different sports and event competitions. Use code CHIN, CHIN, for a free $10 when you sign up by visiting betteredge.com. That's BETTOR edge.com.
Okay, we're back. We just discussed Alex Kirilloff season-ending surgery on his wrist. Roy, one of the benefactors of this development is one Miguel Sano, who now is going to play pretty much every day now for the rest of the season. He has the chance to recover some value or some credibility or whatever you want to call it here. How should Sano be looking at this opportunity?
You know, you could say a lot of things about how I think he should be looking at the opportunity. The one thing about Miguel, and, you know, I love the kid, but he hasn't shown any desire to do a whole lot of anything different than It's like that definition of insanity, right? And doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. There's no, hey, maybe I should just, I should work on looking for the ball out over the plate, hit the ball to right center, you know, the Kirby Puckett, Miguel Cabrera kind of deal. I mean, as talented and strong as he is, I mean, if I were he, that's what I would be doing. I'd say, okay, I'm going to play. They can't take me out of the, I mean, they got to play me. Mm-hmm. They got nobody else. I'm going to be in there. So I'm going to figure this out, right? I'm not going to – I think the biggest problem for young hitters, and he's almost not a young hitter anymore. I mean, he was doing this a long time but he's still young enough to be able to say this about him. The problem with young hitters is they get to the big leagues hitting a certain way, and they think it's only a matter of time. I'll get that back. That's the way I've always done it, and I was great at it up until now, and I'm going to be great at it again. I shouldn't really change a lot. And sometimes you have to change a lot. Sometimes you just have to do something different. So the only thing that I would say to Miguel Sano is, you're going to play. They can't take you out of the lineup. You're going to play. So don't worry about, don't be afraid to do something different because you're worried about results.
Yeah.
Because, because the results really haven't been there for you anyway, doing what you're doing. And secondly, because it's not going to result in you being benched if it doesn't work for a week, you know, or even 2 weeks. They got to play. You're going to play.
I remember when Miguel first came to the majors, and he was hammering balls to center field and left center. He started getting pitched inside more, and he adjusted his stance accordingly to adjust to how he's being pitched. So he's done it before. I kind of wish he would close his stance again so he could try to hit bombs back to the center field once again, you know?
I wish with all my heart, and I've been wishing that for four years, that he would – and this is not a throwaway comment when I talk about – I told him one time 3 years ago, I said, this is none of my business. And, you know, I'm going to say this publicly. I shouldn't have. I mean, it's none of it, I shouldn't be messing with any Twins hitters. But I just told him, just because we've always been friendly, and I just said at the end of the season, I just happened to, you know, be standing with him. I said, hey, none of my business, but here's what I think you should do. Go find, and Major League Baseball has it. Get the club to give you a big reel of Miguel Cabrera at-bats and a big reel of Kirby Puckett at-bats, and you become those guys. You know, set up to hit the ball to right center. And don't worry about hitting it 600 feet to left field, because those will come. They'll just happen. One of the best pieces of advice I ever got as a hitter when I was struggling one time, I'm going to give Jerry Kuzman credit. It actually came from Kuz, you know, left-handed pitcher of great renown, was great for us. And why anybody would think he would know anything about hitting, you know, I don't know, except that, you know, guys that pay attention and guys that listen to hitters talk and stuff, I mean, it's kind of like Jim Cott. You're around long enough, if you're intelligent and you pay attention, you can learn things about skills that aren't yours. You know, pitchers can actually learn things about, you know, about hitting too. And Kuz told me, he said, why don't you just forget the inside corner fastball strike? Just forget it. Don't even look out over the plate. Use the big part of the field. They throw it in there, just take it. They can't hit, you know, pitchers can't hit that spot all the time anyway. They'll throw it inside of that, or they'll miss over the plate and you'll be ready. And I wish Sano would do that. He sets up for the inside fastball, so because that's the one that he can hit out of the ballpark. And once you set up for that, your mind speeds up, your body speeds up, your bat slows down because you're rushing to try to get out there, and you're vulnerable to everything else. And he, of all guys, has the talent and the strength to not be vulnerable to so many pitches, because he can hit the ball 500 feet to right center. I mean, it's like, you know, I would have sold my soul to the devil for the ability to do that.
I know. How about that? You know, I covered the Royals for a few years before I came to Minnesota, and I covered George Brett for a couple of years. And great players make it sound so simple, you know, and sometimes it's hard for someone who's great to explain to someone else who's not great how to be great, you know. But George's thing was, you take hundreds of swings every day. You're in the batting cage before games. You're hitting off a tee before games. When it gets down to it, you just want to get in the box and make sure you see the ball, and then let your mechanics take over. That was his thing. And sometimes I don't know if Miguel recognizes pitches soon enough or
so
well
what,
enough.
What will happen is with a guy that's trying to pull the ball, and he's got a little bit, I think, in the back of his mind, because his swing is long, he's got a little bit of anxiety, if not a lot of anxiety, about being able to catch up to a big league fastball. So, and he thinks to be able to catch up, that means he's got to hit the ball way out in front of him, because the ball's going to be from the middle in, and he's got to get the bat head, you know, that much further out in front.
To get the, yep.
Once you make up your mind that you're going to do that, you need to do that, you don't recognize pitches as well, because you're reacting to the first thing you see out of a pitcher's hands, and you just jump out there and get, so it doesn't beat you. That fastball doesn't beat you. And you won't recognize pitches. I think he can recognize pitches fine if he would back off that approach. If he were looking for the fastball on a middle to outside part of the plate, mm-hmm. and said, I'm going to hit this ball over the center field fence, it's going to be out there, anything in here I'm going to take. Anything in the inside part of the plate I'm going to take until I get two strikes. If they happen to throw in that slider then, when he's looking out there and he's trying to hit the ball to center field, I'm not talking about him being a slap hitter to right field. I'm saying hit the ball over the fence, great.
Yeah.
But hit it to center field or right center. And look at that fastball out there. When he's looking out there and trying to do that, he'll see a hanging slider, and that ball will go, he'll recognize it, and it'll go 900 feet to left field. I used to sit in the dugout and shake my head and say, why does anybody ever throw Kirby Puck at a curveball strike, a breaking ball strike? I have no idea why they would do it. There's no future in that. That ball's going 800 feet to left field, because he was looking for fastballs that he could hit to, you know, that he could hit to center and right center, and because he wanted to hit for a high average, he wanted to hit doubles, and the home runs just came.
You know, get me over curveballs. Usually end up getting hit in the seats.
if you're not trying to jump out there on the inside fastball, I mean, then because when you're doing that, you know, you see the get me over curveball, and you've already kind of committed, and you see hitters flinch. You know, I mean, there's a hanging slider, and they kind of flinch because they're so intent on hitting the ball out in front, and it's their different speed, and they're done.
Yep. All right, we're heading to bonus time here. Roy, we've got to trade some Twins players here before the July 30th deadline. 3 p.m. July 30th is the trade deadline, and the Twins have been involved in multiple rumors concerning a lot of players. They can make a couple moves. They can end up making several moves. It depends on what you think to how this team could compete next year. Do they need a radical change? I am writing for my Sunday column, ladies and gentlemen, in the Star Tribune, that they should reach for the detonator button on this roster. And they should be looking into moving several players, because if you go back to 5 years ago when Thad Levine and Derek Falvey took over, there are still 8 or 9 players left from that 2017 roster. They've won three. They've been in the playoffs 3 times. Once as a wild card, twice as a division champion, and they've gotten swept out of the playoffs each year. Okay, this current group of the players have not gotten it done. And in addition to building a starting rotation that's capable of pitching you through a season and into October, they may need to jiggle the lineup here. And they've got opportunities too, because they have Kirilov on board. They have Larnach on board. They got another kid at AAA, Jose Miranda, who probably deserves to play next year. I was told by a club official 3 days ago, Josh Winder, the highly thought of pitching prospect who's at AAA now, will definitely pitch for the Twins before this year is over. So they're moving toward a younger direction anyway. Should we continue to clear the decks for these kids, or do you think they should try to equip a team that's ready to compete in 2022? I say punt 2022 and look beyond that.
So I tend to agree with you. There's a lot that obviously that's going on that will go on about their ability to do that or not, and that all it's about the guys that they would be willing to trade. And let's say everybody. Let's say we'll listen to, you know, some guys like Buxton are going to take more in return than others. But let's say we're willing to talk about anybody. It will all depend on what the perceived value of those players are, you know, obviously around baseball for somebody else. What are you going to get back?
Right.
Because if they're going to blow it up, then I don't think that's as big a, it's not that big a gamble if you get a bunch of young players in return that are big league players within 2 years. I mean, good big league players within 2 years. Mm-hmm. If you're waiting 5 years,
that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a problem for us fans, and they're not going to be willing to do that. So they're hamstrung a little bit, I think. I would guess that they're hamstrung a little bit by the disparity in what the Twins think the value of the players are and what
teams.
What teams that they would be that would be trade partners think the value of those players are relative to the guys that the Twins want from those teams in return, right? So that's why I'm always amazed. Everybody talks about, we'll just make this trade and that trade. Trades don't get made very often because there's a big disparity between what the owning team, the trading team thinks of their players and what the receiving team, you know, thinks of those players on the Twins in this case. And so we'll see what happens. I agree with you that drastic measures need to be taken. They need to fix the bullpen. Another starting pitcher would be, you know, a young guy that's going to be a stud, you know, would be really great. There are things that they can fix around the infield. I mean, there are things, you know, catcher, I think, is still not an absolute certainty. So, you know, I mean, there are a lot of things that the Twins could do. If they blow it all up and it takes 5 years, it's going to be a problem. I know what I was going to say about the value the Twins have. It's sometimes it's not like you overvalue your guys compared to everybody else, but they're automatically overvalued because that's who you have, and you know what they can do. Like Jose Berríos, you know, they may want a player that's almost impossible to get for Berríos, because if they trade Berríos, who they got? You know, that's the problem. I mean, not only the Twins value their players one way, probably more highly than others, but they have to. You know, it's just built into the fact that, well, yeah, but if we don't have Berríos, I mean, who's starting every 5 days?
Right.
And that automatically kicks the value up a little bit.
Yes. Let's get to Berríos in a minute here. Just at the immediate part of this, they've got some guys who are out of contract at the end of the year that they probably could get something for in return. Number one, Nelson Cruz deserves to be on a pennant contender. They should be looking to move Cruz to a team that has a chance to win. Michael Pineda's out of contract. He could probably be a back-end starter on a good rotation.
Oh, for sure he could.
Yes.
I like when he takes the ball out there every time.
I don't know how many teams need a shortstop, but Andrelton Simmons is probably not going to be back next year. Who else is going to be back next year? Those are the top three on my list. I'm missing one other guy who's out of contract. You got guys like Hansel Robles has been mentioned as a trade possibility. Robles has a live arm, does not throw enough strikes for me.
Right.
And that gets him into trouble. Now, when you get to Berríos, he told our Phil Miller over the weekend that he's thinking about free agency. He's a year and a half away, that he's worked hard to get to this point. He sounds like a man who's going to be very hard for them to sign. It sounds like someone who's looking forward to hitting free agency and maxing out. With that in mind, how would you approach this, Roy? Because if I thought the Twins had a chance to compete next year, I would have no problems walking in with Berríos as a lame duck starter. But I don't think they have a chance to compete next year, so I think you should look at alternatives. And this is going to be the one time that the Twins, that the most talented starting pitcher available on the market, trade market, is a Twin. So he could be the best starting pitcher available, which means the Twins can name a high price and be picky. And sometimes not making a trade is better than making a bad one. But I think they should be exploring everything as far as Berríos is concerned.
So, you know, the points that you make are really good. They're right on in my view. And I would add this. For teams to be successful, you have to trade somebody when it looks like you shouldn't, right? In my day job, you know, in looking at managing money and portfolio investment portfolios, you want to buy when your stomach is going, oh, I can't buy now. It's down. It could go down farther. Yeah. You know, and you want to sell when people are euphoric and you want, that's when it's time to sell. In like manner, the organizations that are going to be, that have been successful and will continue to be successful, are people that make trades a year too early, because a year later they're not going to get the same value, and they have to keep replenishing. And I would hate to see, your point's a great one. The Twins trade a pitcher who's the best one on the market. Mm-hmm. You got to be kidding. I mean, right. Everybody's looking for pitching. Twins need pitching. How can you do that? But I think there's, to your earlier point about this team having not gotten it done yet, and having to, you have to get younger and all those. The corollary to that is you have to make really unpopular trades. Mm-hmm. You have to have the courage to say, we got to make this deal because that's going to make us better. Maybe not next year, but for the 5 years after that, we're going to be a lot better. That's the way I think you have to look at it. And if you can't answer that question affirmatively, if you can't say what we're getting in return is not going to make us better, for 5 years, then you don't make the deal. Then you're right. I mean, sometimes you the best trade you make is one you don't make, right?
Yeah, right.
The best decision you make is one you don't make. But if they were to get their socks knocked off with somebody wanting Brios, I think you have to do that just because that's the way it's done. If you're not the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Red Sox, or the Mets, or potentially the Angels. Mm-hmm. And willing to, $800 million payroll. So what do I care? If you're right. Not willing to do that, then the only other option is to do what I've just suggested.
What are your thoughts on the Buxton situation? The report in The Athletic, I had to mention that publication, about a week ago, said that the Twins are trying once again to sign Buxton. And they've tried before. And I was told they got close to spring training, and they thought they had a path to a deal, but it got nixed at the end. They're trying once again to lock Buxton up. And if not, the story suggested he was going to get traded. First of all, Buxton's not playing until next month again. He's going to be out for another month, I was told. It's hard for me to see a trade being made for a guy that's still recovering from a broken bone. It's hard for me to see. So if they trade Buxton, I think it's going to be during the offseason. What should their approach be? Because I think in the Lavelle detonation plan, it includes – keeping Buxton and figuring out a way to have him in center field and kind of shepherd some of these young guys.
I absolutely agree. When you think about Kirilloff and Larnach and Kepler, I mean, let's say ultimately if Kirilloff's playing first base and Larnach and Kepler are playing in the outfield, you're getting really left-handed and you need Buxton's right-handed bat. You need right-handed bats in there. But that's kind of down the list of reasons why you keep Buxton, right? I mean, I almost think you just live and die with Byron Buxton. Some streak of years, he's going to play the whole season, and we're going to see what we've been waiting for. What we saw early this season. I just don't believe in the he can't stay on the field. He's gotten some really freak injuries that were not about anything that's physically wrong with him, right?
And it hasn't been soft tissue injuries. It's been blood force.
No, it's been blood force trauma. Absolutely, yes. It has been. And there's not anything you can do about it. You can't say, well, God, a guy can't stay on the field. Well, he broke his toe with fouling a ball off. He got hit in the hand. He got,
ran to a wall.
He ran into a wall. He ran into the ground, yes. Diving. I mean, and so I think ultimately you live and die with Byron because he's that kind of talent. And of all the people that they have, in the Lavelle detonation plan, he is the one that would kill us the most emotionally if he went someplace and became the Mike Trout that he's got the chance to be. And I would go down as making the biggest financial mistake ever. I'll just die with Byron. I just will. I'll get fired as a general manager saying, yeah, we paid him a lot of money. He could never stay on the field. I'm just going down with the ship on that one.
Look at it this way. Byron can look at it this way. I've hurt almost every bone in my body. Yeah. I'm not going to get hurt anymore. And I'm going to stay healthy going forward.
There's something to that.
Yeah. Before I let you go, Give me a minute or two on the fact that the Angels are in town this weekend. That means Shohei Ohtani, the two-way star, is in town. What's it like to watch this guy perform?
It's not to be believed for you know, for me, for, you know, I think for any of us, but for me, having, you know, come up to the big league, having watched baseball all my life, and back in what I thought was the golden age of, for me, the golden age of baseball, when it was kind of toward the end of Mickey Mantle and Ted Williams and Stan Musial and those guys, and here comes you know, and Henry Aaron was in the prime of his life, and Willie Mays, and you know, all of these guys, right? I mean, it's just, you know, fantastic. And then I played, and I know how tough it is to play this stupid game, and I see all the great players around me that I'm playing with and against, and you kind of get an idea of what it takes to be at the top of your game as a hitter or the top of your game as a pitcher. And never the twain shall meet. And now the twain has just met. and I can't believe it. I mean, this guy is, I mean, how do you do that, right? I mean, people, it's so easy to throw around as a once in a generation player, or, you know, this is almost a once in a lifetime, it is a once in a lifetime. None of us were alive when Babe Ruth, you know, was around. So, I mean, it's a once in two or three lifetimes.
Yes.
You know, kind of thing that he's doing. And boy, I mean, it looks like it's sustainable. I hope it is, because people need to watch. This is not just history in the making. This is whatever is beyond that. This is incredible. This is the history and future history.
It may be just a comet passing through the baseball atmosphere, because you may never see a Ohtani again.
You may yep. never, ever see anything like this. But I will say one other thing about it. What I love about it, all sports are competing for the best athletes. Basketball, football, hockey, baseball, golf now. They're all competing for what is going to turn on this particular great athlete. What is he like the best? And you saw a lot of great athletes go into golf because Tiger Woods was a great athlete, you know, and he changed the game in an athletic sort of way. And now you saw a lot of kids that were good athletes and strong and wanted to lift and, you know, do and get better. And it happens in all sports. And for baseball to have a guy come along that would capture the imagination of young kids as they come up and they become really great athletes, and what if I could become the next, Ohtani? I think it's the kind of impact, the kind of influence that could, like Tiger had in an entire industry, where baseball could start getting really great athletes again because of the Ohtanis and the Trouts and the Arenados of the world. And so, yeah, the more the better. Go to it, young man. I just do it. You know, be the next Babe Ruth.
Yep, it'll be worth going to Target Field this weekend to watch Ohtani ply his trade here. Thanks a lot, Roy. Thanks to our sponsors, Minnesota Propane, as well as Better Edge. This is Chin Music on Talk North. We'll talk to you soon. Take it easy.